us do about burnout. We have to figure out first what burnout is. So I didn't look it up in the dictionary. I bet there is an entry nowadays for it. But when I think of burnout, I think of several things. One is physical exhaustion or mental exhaustion. It can be fueled by discouragement or frustration. And it leads us to kind of give up, to either push ourselves until we get way overdone, or just to throw in the towel, as they say, and give up what we're doing. Okay, so none of that leads to a particularly good result. One of the things that I think is involved with burnout, there's a few factors that I think brings it on. One is we set the bar for ourselves way up here. Yeah, we make expectations of what we're able to do, what we should do. We put them way up here. That's something that's impractical. Yeah. Or sometimes what happens is we want to be able to do something, so we put the bar up here. But we haven't really reflected beforehand if we're able to do that, in terms of, do we have the time? Do we have the energy? Do we have the skill? Are we the right person to do it? We just have, sometimes in our enthusiasm, we don't really check things out very well before we commit to doing something. And so in the process, we make an expectation that's way up here. Okay, is this making some sense to you? Is this ringing a bell? Yeah? So, if we can look at some examples of burnout. I usually think of burnout in terms of our Dharma practice, because I think of it, Shantideva, the great 8th century Indian sage, talked about, the paramita of joyous effort. And he didn't use the word burnout, but his whole teaching was how to avoid burnout and overcome burnout. And so he taught that in terms of our Dharma practice. But it happens in terms of your work life, your social life, so many things that you do. Yeah, you start out with enthusiasm, and you really want to do something, and you start, and you do something, and it's great. And then you're tired. So, when we look at it, I think this element of setting the bar for ourselves too high is a big thing in it. You know, in your work, of course you want to be able to do your job well, and, you have some sense of integrity and pride in your job, and you want to do it well. There may or may not be pressure from your boss, but you take on that pressure, or you invent pressure. Like, okay, if I'm going to get that promotion, then I have to take on all these other little projects so that I can look really good to the boss. And if we're doing a team project, I've got to participate, but I've really got to come in at the end. Everybody else do the hard work at the beginning, but I'll come in at the end and kind of put it all together. Okay. So we want to impress our boss, or maybe even we just have that sense of integrity and want to do a good job ourselves. But we haven't thought it out beforehand, and we bite off more than we can chew. Do you do this at work sometimes? Yeah? So the antidote to that is to just, you know, stay grounded, look at what we're capable of doing and what we're not capable of doing, and spell that out to ourselves and to anybody else we're working with at the very beginning. Okay? So that we don't promise to others to do more than we can do, and we don't expect ourselves to do more than we can do. Now, granted, sometimes that means accepting ourselves, which we don't always want to do. We want to push. You know, I'm going to do better, and I've got to do this. This is crucial. And I'm going to push. I'm going to do better than my colleagues because I want that promotion. Okay? So here it can be very helpful to ask yourself, what am I going to get from having the promotion? Okay, what good is pushing myself to do something, to get a promotion or to get a raise or whatever it is? How am I actually going to benefit from that? So your first thought is, I get more. Money. So then you have to say, well, okay, I'm going to get more money, but at the end I'm going to be exhausted. So I may have more money, but am I going to be able to use it the way I want? Or will I have to use it to pay medical bills because I'm sick from being exhausted? Okay. Or I want to get more money because then I can take my family on a holiday, or I can, because then I can pay for my kids to go to a private school. Then my kids will have that on their CV that they went to this school, and that will set them up to have a good job and for them to make money. The problem with that is that you are so dedicated to making money that you don't spend much time with your children because you're too busy making the money. And as a result, the money can't go for their going to a better school. It goes for them having counseling and therapy because they feel unloved. Because mom and dad were always at the office working hard to make money. Yeah. Is it worth it? Yeah. Is it worth it? Do you really need more money to be happy? Especially if it winds up that you're wasted at the end of the day. And, you know, you come home from work and you just open the door and you're like... Because it's 11 o'clock at night, and you finally got off work, and you have to be there at 7 in the morning. Yeah. And so your kids walk by you on the way to school in the morning, and you can't even say hello because you're zonked out. Okay? So we really have to ask ourselves, is more money really going to make us happier? Is more money really what our family needs to be a healthy, harmonious family? Okay, so this, when I say about checking things out, this is what I mean. Instead of assuming money will do it, to really check out if that's going to happen, or if there are other things that are actually more important to our family. Some of you are looking at me like I'm on Mars. What? How can you insinuate that money isn't the goal of my life? Yeah. If I have money, then I'm successful. Then my parents will finally acknowledge how wonderful I am and treat me well instead of treating my brother and sister so good. Finally, I will prove myself that I am competent. Okay. So look inside your mind about what's motivating you. See if that's really what you want in your life. Okay. In terms of volunteers, yeah, I can speak a lot about volunteer burnout, because having been a nun for many years, I depend a lot on volunteers. The monastery where I live, we depend on volunteers. When I taught at a Dharma center, the Dharma center depends on volunteers. And I saw over and over again that people really have such a good heart and they want to help and they volunteer to help because they have a good heart and they want to contribute. And so then they give commitments to do something, and then about 3 or 4 days before that task is supposed to be done, they call and say, "Oh, I'm very sorry, I've been extremely busy, I haven't been able to do it." So that's real convenient for me. Yeah? I'm counting on people to do what they say they're gonna do, and then in very short, just a few days before, they say, "Oh, sorry, I haven't been able to do it." So then I have to scramble to somehow make things happen. And so I see it's not because people are mean that they do this. It's not that they want to inconvenience other people. It's that they overcommitted, that in their enthusiasm, they didn't really assess first, you know, do I have the time to do this? Do I have the skills to do this? Yeah, and so that they could really be sure to complete what they started. Yeah. So that's why I really stress, now, you may be enthusiastic about volunteering, you may be enthusiastic about something at work, but really stop and examine first before you commit. Okay? That will avoid burnout and will avoid your, you know, putting others in a tight space. Okay? So really assessing what we can do and what we can't do. If we feel bad because we would love to be able to do something, but we don't really have the time to do it, yeah, then there's no reason to feel bad. Just notice, okay, right now in my life I have priorities with X, Y, and Z. I would like to do A, B, and C, but I have to do this right now at this moment is more important, okay? So don't feel bad because you're unable to do things that you would like to do for others. But the best thing is, even if you commit and then you realize in the middle that you can't complete it, the best thing is to call the other people right away don't wait until 2 days before. Yeah? And this is at work or in your volunteer work. You know, call them as soon as you realize you're not going to be able, and explain the situation, and then, you know, see if, you know, if you can, see if you can find somebody else to take your place. And if you can't find somebody else to take your place, at least whoever is depending on it has enough advance notice to arrange something else. Okay? And so that avoids your also feeling bad for not being able to complete it because, you know, you did your duty. You called as soon as you realized you couldn't finish. Okay? So that also is very important. But this whole thing of really assessing our abilities. Yeah. So Shantideva, when he spoke about joyous effort, there were a few, which is the antidote to burnout. There's a few points that he really emphasized. One is not to be discouraged, to avoid discouragement. Okay? So again, I think discouragement often comes because of having unrealistic expectations. Okay? So it can happen in our Dharma practice, in our work life, wherever, you know. Especially in Dharma practice. When you meet the Dharma at the beginning, it really rings a bell and you're like, I love the Dharma. And you practice it, you see a lot of changes at the beginning. And then as you practice more, the pace of the changes slows down, because you realize that there's a few pretty deeply ingrained bad habits, and there's a few, or maybe many, deeply ingrained mental afflictions and disturbing emotions. And so while at the beginning of the practice, you know, we were able to shed some layers, let's say, of anger, then as we progress and we're dealing with deeper, more rooted layers of anger, then, gee, you know, I met Buddhism and it was so wonderful. And I practiced really hard for a month, and I went to a retreat for a week, and I thought that by the next week after that, I would have at least reached the path of seeing. You know, if not Buddhahood itself. So, you know, there's something a little bit exaggerated in our expectations. So I find, especially in Buddhist practice, it's so important to accept ourselves for where we are. Now, having said that, some people tell me, okay, if I accept myself for where I am, then I stop trying to be better. And it's only by criticizing myself and berating myself that I can get the energy to push myself so I can be better. Okay? There was one man who came to the Abbey. He was an Army Ranger. Okay, you may not know about U.S. Army Rangers, but these guys are the guys that work really hard and they train really hard, and they have to sit in the middle of a pond, of a lake, and hold a bar and recite the Army Creed to build up their inner strength and so on. So this guy was no wimp. Okay, he was, you know, I'm an Army Ranger. No wimp at all. But he was the one who told me this. Yeah? one of the people who told me this, that unless I criticize myself, I'm not going to persevere. And yet, I saw, as he was trying to practice the Dharma and criticize himself for not being better, he was digging himself into a hole. And he was becoming very discouraged, yeah, and very kind of depressed. Because in Dharma practice, as in much of our life, we can't push ourselves to do more than we're capable of doing at any particular moment. We can only do what we're capable of, and we have to accept that. So his job was to accept himself as he was. And that was really hard because he was used to pushing himself in army training. Okay? So, other people fear accepting themselves because, again, they think, if I accept myself, it means I stop trying to improve in the future. That's not correct, because we accept ourselves for where we're at right now at this moment. In accepting what is reality at this moment, we're not saying that we can't improve in the future. Because, of course, we can improve in the future. Yeah? Of course, slowly, gradually, step by step, we can develop our abilities. So accepting ourselves now does not contradict having the aspiration to improve ourselves in the future. In fact, accepting ourselves now gives us much more energy so that, again, slowly, gradually, we can improve in the future. If we don't accept ourselves for what we are right now, then we'll be like this guy who just constantly, oh, I'm such a bad practitioner and I can't do this well and I can't well do that well. And I love Buddhism so much, but I'm really not sure I'm able to continue practicing it. If you are having all those kind of thoughts in your mind, where's your energy going? Is it going to improve yourself? No! You're digging yourself into a ditch. Yeah? And the ditch is called discouragement and depression. Oh, I'm so terrible. I'm hopeless. Everybody's better than me. I try so hard, but I'm not awakened yet. Yeah. My teachers are going to be disappointed. I was going to be better than all those other practitioners, but I'm not. Yeah. And then you find yourself sitting in the middle of a ditch that you yourself created. And then what do? Once you're in a ditch, you decorate it. Yeah? And you decorate it with all the signs of how much you failed. Yeah? So all those buttons that said victory on them that you were wearing, you put on the wall and you draw a line through. All your grades in which you didn't do as well as you wanted to, you put them on the wall. All the letters from your ex-boyfriend or girlfriend telling you that they can't stand you anymore and they're breaking up, you paste a wall around the wall. And then you sit there and go, it's true. No use trying. Better turn on my smartphone and watch some movies instead. And order a takeout pizza with some beer. actually, why stop at beer? How about some whiskey? And I'll just sit in my hole. Okay, so that's what happens when you push yourself with unrealistic expectations. Okay? Accepting what we are is just accepting the reality of the moment. We have the Buddha nature. We can always improve in the future. I used to kind of feel bad because I tried to learn Tibetan language and I was always having one obstacle after the other obstacle. And I said to one of my teachers, I don't seem to be able to learn Tibetan. And he said, if you can become a Buddha, you can learn Tibetan. Okay? So I'm still trying to become a Buddha, but I've kind of given up on learning Tibetan, at least in this lifetime. Okay, so I encourage her to learn Tibetan, because she can do what I have never been able to do, that I can rejoice at the success. Okay, so that's what parents often do to your kids, isn't it? You want your kids to succeed in everything that you weren't able to do. So then you could feel proud of your kids, at least, you know, well, I couldn't do it, but my kid can. So I'm really good after all. That's not really a fair, very fair way to treat your kids, okay? Yeah, but acceptance, I think, is quite important, you know? So avoiding that kind of discouragement, avoiding putting ourselves down and criticizing ourselves. And I think this is a big problem for many people. And often we don't even realize the internal chatter going on in our mind of deprecating ourselves. Yeah? So when you see that kind of self-talk going on, you have to press the stop button on it. Okay? And ask yourself, look at those things that you're telling yourself. And ask yourself if they're true. Okay? I took this job and I tried so hard and I didn't get the promotion after 1 year. Therefore, I can't do anything right in my life. Is that true? Just because you didn't get the promotion after 1 year, does that mean you can't do anything right in your life? Come on. That statement's a bit extreme, don't you think? Okay, so watch out for that kind of self-talk and challenge it, because a lot of it, most of it, is garbage. Okay? Just because you think it, it isn't true. Yeah. Thank you. Smart baby. Now, another thing that Shantideva talked about, when he talked about joyous effort, was consistency, and steadfastness. So, you know, to look before we commit and assess if we're able to do it. But if we see that we are able to do it, then really make it a priority and be consistent and be steadfast and try and complete it. Okay? If it's a task at work, like I said, budget your time so that you make sure you have enough time to complete it, recognizing that you're gonna hit some bumps in the middle and it'll probably take you longer than you think. Okay? Yeah. Now, we always think we assess how much time something is gonna take, realistically. My life experience teaches me that and it usually takes longer than you think. Okay? So we're building a Buddha hall. Many people say, when are you going to start construction? And I say, well, we'll try to start in the spring of 2020, but it depends on many other factors that we can't control at this moment. Yeah. So don't be surprised if we don't break ground next spring. Okay? Because we're trying, but, you know, I've learned because we've built a few, you know, we built Chenrezig Hall before and so on. Oh, you budget so much time and you're going to get this done by this time and this done by this time. No. Either, you know, you can't get all the material together to get the building permit, or the person at the county wants to send your application for the building permit to the other side of the country, which in Singapore is okay, you could drive there. In the US, it goes to the other side of the country. It's in some office on somebody's desk collecting dust. And you have no control over it, even though you call the office, because they say, oh, so-and-so's taking care of it. Oh, please transfer me to so-and-so. Hello, so-and-so, how's that application going? Oh, it's with another person who's looking at it. And you go from person to person. Yeah? So, eventually, like I'm saying this from, because this is exactly what happened to us when we built Chenrezig Hall. I think it took us 3 months to get the building permit. It took a long time, much longer than we expected. Yeah? So it's like this in life, isn't it? You know? So don't be surprised when things take longer. And when you make a plan, give yourself extra time. Okay? They say when you construct a building, add 15 or even 25% more as kind of a buffer. My experience with building is even you do that, it's always more. So don't be surprised when that happens. You know, so everything we do in life, I told you my slogan already, that as soon as you have a plan, you know what will not happen. Okay? So when it doesn't happen, don't freak out. Yeah? Is it? See? This baby is really smart. Yeah? Don't freak out. And this is just part of life. And so use it as part of your Dharma practice, okay? This is my Bodhisattva practice, because instead of getting frustrated and flabbergasted and angry because my plan is not working out according to the timetable, my challenge in my Dharma practice right now is to relax. You know? Because you do what you can, and you can't do what you can't do. Yeah? So you accept it. Yeah. Even if everybody else comes up to you afterwards and says, I thought you were starting construction last spring. Thank you. I'm glad you remember that that was our aspiration. But it's going to turn out to be longer than we thought it would be. Yeah? So you just deal with it. Yeah? I had an experience once where I felt I was engaged in this project very enthusiastic about it, working together with some other people on it, starting it out and, you know, and really trying to go forward. And then the whole thing collapsed, you know? And I realized, okay, there were some red flags at the beginning that I ignored. I should have paid better attention to some things that different people said at the beginning. But I was so excited about the project that I whitewashed it. And I thought, we'll overcome that. That's not a problem, really. It was a big problem. Okay. And then I had to go and answer to the people who supported me. One of my friends was very kind. She said, it's like you're coming like a dog with their tail between their legs. But she said it in a very sympathetic way, you know? And I said, yeah, that's exactly how I feel, you know? I tried and I flopped. But I learned so much from that experience. Yeah, I learned so much that I'm really glad it happened. So when you fail at something, or when something doesn't go the way you want, you know, actually you don't know that it's a bad thing. It could be something very good. You don't have to leave just because the baby is making noise. Yeah? They're encouraging everybody to pay attention and emphasizing. Yeah, you're emphasizing all the important points, aren't you? Yeah? Yeah, without you here, they would all be asleep. Really, we don't mind the noise of the baby, do we? Yeah. Although I should tell you, one time some friends of ours, a couple came to a teaching I was giving, and the baby was there, and people were paying so much attention to the baby that they ignored me. So then I took the baby and put the baby on my lap. And then everybody paid attention. Yeah. You were there when I did it, huh? Yeah, it worked. So, because yeah. Everybody loves babies. Yeah. Okay. So, where was I? Yeah. So, failure can actually be good, you know. There's an old Chinese tale about that, isn't there? About the man who, and the horse. Yeah, do you remember that? Yeah. And his horse ran away, and people said, "Oh, that's too bad." And he said, "Well, we'll see." And then the horse came back, and everybody said, "Oh, hooray! Your horse came back." And he said, "We'll see." And then his son was riding the horse one day, and the horse threw him, and his son was injured. And people said, "Oh, that's terrible." And he said, "We'll see." And then the government came to take all the young men to the army, but his son couldn't go because he was injured. So people said, "Oh, you're so lucky." He said, "We'll see." Yeah? So we don't really know. Yeah? Really smart baby. Yeah? We don't really know what is a long-term benefit and what isn't. Yeah. So if we view everything as an opportunity to learn, then everything becomes an opportunity to learn. And everything becomes part of our Dharma practice. So another thing that Shantideva talked about was, after you've accomplished something, rest. Okay. He put that at the end of the chapter. We like it at the beginning of the chapter. You know? How about if we start out with rest? And then we gradually get into things. But he really, you know, noticed that when we do something and we complete it, it's really important to rejoice at what we've done. Even we miss the deadline, yeah, to rejoice at putting our energy into something good, rejoice that other people will benefit from whatever project we did, yeah, and then take a break and rest, yeah, and I think that's very good, you know, very good advice, because we tend to, you know, okay, I finish that, then I start the next thing. Boom, 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 boom. You know? So I notice some people, they finish school on Friday, they start work on Monday. You know, what about taking more than a weekend off between school and your first job? Now parents are going to throw a fit. But really, I think, you know, for kids, to have some space to maybe travel or learn something about life before they start in the grind of the work life can really be beneficial for them in the long term. Yeah? I graduated, I worked for a year, and then I quit my job and I traveled for a year and a half and used the savings from my job, from my work. And it was wonderful. It was one of the best things I ever did. I learned so much. It really opened my mind to the world, to understanding people. Oh, there's one mother freaking out already. No, it's you. Don't look in back of me. You may not have realized it. You were like... Yeah, but I really think, you know, it's so important not to push ourselves. Yeah, when we finish something, rejoice, rest, do something different, give your mind some space. Yeah, then take up the next project. Okay, but before you take up the next thing, evaluate it first before you commit. Okay? Now somebody's going to say, but I can't do that because my boss has projects lined up for the next three countless great eons. Yeah? And how am I ever going to do everything my boss wants me to do? Well, you go and talk to your boss and you say, I want to be a sane human being. Don't you? Yeah? I want to be a sane human being. And I like the work, you know, at this company, but I really need to explain that I have needs too in order to keep my body healthy and my mind balanced, so that I can continue working in a consistent way. Yeah? And so, you know, can we discuss my work schedule and what you expect of me? Yeah. And if your boss says no, you've got to do this and this and this and this and this, then you look for another job. Yeah, see what happened? You mean quit my job? Oh, that's so unpatriotic. You know? Oh, no, I can't quit my job and look for a better job. I've got to... Yeah, I've got to wear myself out and make myself exhausted. Yeah? and made myself sick because I'm pushing because my boss pushes. Yeah, this is insanity. And, you know, some managers are now realizing it, you know, that pushing the people who work for them actually decreases people's ability to work well and accomplish their deeds, you know. And it also makes people burn out. And when you're burnt out, you may show up for work every day, but, you know, you spend most of the time just doodling because you can't concentrate. Yeah. So I think, you know, people in managerial positions, please be kind to the employees. They are human beings with physical and emotional needs. And so this is also why, at least in the States, they're starting mindfulness courses in businesses. Okay, and yeah, and you know, having communication courses, nonviolent communication courses in businesses, and doing all sorts of things like this to help the employees, you know, be a sane human being. Now, it's true that sometimes businesses may not do this for the right reason. They do it because, okay, they have mindfulness, they have communication training. Now they'll work harder and we'll make more money. So they may not have the best reasons and good motivation. But still, it's something that benefits people. Yeah. And another thing that's important to avoid burnout is ask for help when you need it. Don't be so proud that you think you can do everything yourself and that if you don't do it, it won't get done properly. Sometimes we're really a bit proud and arrogant and we don't want to delegate work or we don't want to ask for help when we need it. Yeah. And then as a result, we put too much on our own plate and we get sick, we get exhausted, we feel like nobody else is supporting us. But it's actually a situation that we've brought on ourselves. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with asking for help when you need it. And many people want to help. So especially at home, sometimes it's difficult managing work and your commitments at home too. Yeah, nothing wrong with asking your family members to help you. Yeah. And I think especially when you ask kids to help, kids like to help, you know. Very young kids, they like to help. They feel important when they get to help mom and dad. Yeah. So teach them from when they're really little to help you out and praise them. And, you know, then they grow up liking that. And also, it's a way for you to connect with your kids. Yeah. My sister and my niece go do the family laundry together. Yeah. And my niece has been doing this since she was really little. And she and my sister really connect and they have a good time doing it. Okay. So ask your kids to help. There's nothing written in concrete that say that men cannot do housework. They are fully capable of doing housework. Aren't you guys? Yeah? Are you capable of vacuuming, sweeping the floor, making your bed? Yeah? Or do you want your mama to follow you around? Yeah. Even when you're 70 years old, making your bed. We have young people come to the Abbey. The girls are usually, the young women are usually pretty neat. Yeah. The boys, you know, how long does it take to make your bed? I think, all of about 30 seconds, you pull up the sheet and blanket. In fact, less than 30 seconds. It doesn't take long, but somehow many young men have not been taught how to make their bed. Can you believe it? The women all go, yes. Because we've seen that. Yeah. But, you know, we need to learn to be responsible for ourselves. Yeah. And learn how to do these things. Learn how to clean up your room. How to make your bed. How to sweep a floor. We have people come to the Abbey in their 20s. They've never swept a floor before. We have to teach them how to sweep the floor, don't we? Yeah? Yeah? Oh. Yeah? So really, you're actually helping your children if you get them involved in doing some of the household tasks. Because then when they live on their own, you know, they will be able to do it, and that will remove one source of conflict for them with whoever they're rooming with or whoever they marry. Okay. Okay, guys? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. So that's just some thoughts about burnout, how to avoid it, you know, and asking for help and taking a break before you get yourself so exhausted. Huh? Right? Okay, so time for questions or comments.
Relating to what you said just now about not being afraid to ask for help if you need it. Mm-hmm. But you know from how your boss's style is that if you ask for help, you're just going to get a wallaby.
Then you look for another job. You know? I mean, who wants to work for a boss that is a slave driver? Yeah, employees are not slaves and they should not be treated as slaves. Yeah, that's my opinion. The economy is doing well. In Singapore, there are many jobs. And you people are talented and have many skills. So actually, this is something when you're looking for a job, look for, you know, for the kind of work that you really enjoy. And also, you know, you might interview your superior too, you know, your boss in work, and, you know, ask what their style of management is. Ask what they expect of their employees. Ask what happens if, you know, a due date is not met. You know, so when you're interviewing for a job, it's good to really learn something about the workplace. And then that can help you to decide if you want to accept the job offer.
Yeah, I did all that. And I just say the outcome is not quite what it was painted.
Yeah, that happens, doesn't it? What do you think you should do? What do you think you should do when you have a boss like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm in social work.
Uh-huh.
So I was actually thinking about compassion burnout for the team.
Mm.
And that sense of helplessness, because we can't help everybody.
Mm.
But at the same time, there's that desire, that compassion that we feel, and sometimes that can be a bit overwhelming.
Right, okay. So, when you're in a helping profession, okay, and you want to help other people, and you try, and they don't do what you tell them to do. Maybe you're a doctor, you ask a patient with heart disease to lose weight, and they go out and get a bar of chocolate. Okay? you're a social worker, you ask, you know, somebody to go look for a job, and they go out and get a beer instead. You know, this happens a lot in our life, doesn't it? Yeah? And so some people call that compassion burnout, when you get so exhausted from that. Roshi Joan Halifax, yeah, is a friend of mine, and the book about compassion, living with an open-hearted life, I sent it to her and asked her to write an endorsement about it. And in the book, we mentioned compassion burnout, this very thing. And she wrote back and she said, the term compassion burnout really isn't correct, because if you burn out, your compassion hasn't been pure compassion at the beginning. There were expectations that a person would follow your advice. There's the wish to have control over all of the circumstances so that somebody else can be successful. And when you're in a helping profession, you cannot control all the circumstances. Yeah? And you cannot make somebody do something. So the real compassion is knowing, you know, okay, right now this person isn't so open. Yeah? Oh, you're bringing the baby up to me. Hi, sweetheart. Oh, hi, sweetheart. Oh, money penny. 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 That's how you say money pay me home in baby talk. Yes, you are a precious little guy. Huh? A precious one. Okay, this is your moment of fame. I think Mom wants you back. Okay, come again. Will you come again? Good, thank you. Back to Mama. Are you Papa? Okay. Very cute little guy, huh? So, where were we?
Oh, okay.
So, we have to make sure, we have to learn how to deal with frustration, yeah? Because we want to help. We would like so much to control people so that they stop doing things like shooting themselves in the foot, and we can't control them, yeah? And so we accept it. We do what we can, we accept it, we keep the door open, because sometime later they may understand and come back, and at that time the door will be open from our side and we'll be able to help them. Okay? I do a lot of prison work, one of the things that the guys have said to me, especially the ones who have had drug and alcohol abuse problems, is, you know, because they get assigned by the court to go to a detox program or, you know, whatever, they go, they know what to do, what to say, and then they sneak whatever their substance of choice is in, and they use it, and when they complete the program, they go out and they continue to use. But they tell me sometimes you have to hit bottom before you really decide to change. Yeah? And for somebody who's a family member or a social worker or a doctor or a therapist or a counselor, it is so difficult to watch somebody that you care about basically shoot themselves in their foot, do something counterproductive, and hit bottom. But the guys tell me once they hit bottom, they realize that they're the ones who have to change, and they have to stop blaming the rest of the world for their problems. And that is when they start to get themselves together. Yeah, so sometimes you have to have your compassion stretch a long way. Yeah? So that you just know, I can do what I can, and then it's up to them. I mean, look at it. All the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have been trying to lead us to awakening. From beginningless time, they've been dragging us even to awakening. Do we cooperate? You know? The Buddha says, take the five precepts. We say, no. Buddha says, okay, take one precept. Okay, but I'll do it on my own terms. Okay. I mean, look at what the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas go through with us. Yeah? They say, abandon lying, because if you lie, it'll throw you to a bad rebirth. What do? We go out and lie. Yeah? So, you know, I find this very helpful when I have to work with people and they're, you know, so intent on self-sabotage, that to just think of what the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are going through with me. And that they don't give up on me. So if they don't give up on me, I shouldn't give up on other people. But not giving up on other people doesn't mean I keep trying to help when they aren't receptive. Because that's wasting my time and energy. Better I use my time and energy to help the people who are receptive, who want to learn. Okay?
I just had a comment about all the job-related stuff, because I've been to most of your lectures on this trip, mm-hmm. and you bring that up a lot about working here. And what I have found in my career that's really worked is when I have that boss, I have left, or I try and change it. And if he overloads me with too much work, I say, well, if you want me to do this, then I can't do that. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't affected my career. And I think it's self-worth. Like we don't believe in ourselves enough that I can go out and get a new job. So yeah. I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. And that I deserve to be treated properly
exactly.
when I'm working. Yeah. That I have some rights in this situation too. Thank you.
I'm a mother of a teenager sitting right next to me, and
good luck.
I actually feel sorry for the views of today because they are on 24/7 because of the social media,
yeah.
and I feel that there is actually social media burnout. It afflicts many adults as well.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about the new world that we live in. I mean, they don't know the world before social media, so I think it's hard for them to imagine how to switch off.
Yeah. Yeah, I find that a really big problem, that young people don't know how to relate to living beings in front of their nose anymore. They only know how to relate to living beings on a screen. Yeah? And you lose so much from life when your whole life is this big. And when all your relationships with people are filtered through a screen. Yeah? Because people are much more than the visual face on the screen, and you get to really know a whole person when you can actually be there in real time. Yeah. So I think that it's important for parents to set limits on social media from the time kids are very little. I think it's also important for parents not to give the kids a screen when they're very little to distract your kid and keep them busy. Because I see this very often, you know, parents want to do something, so they need to occupy the kid. So they put the kid in front of a screen to watch television, to watch a movie on the internet, to play a game on an iPad. And when you do that, I mean, I've seen little kids, like 2-3 years old, just glued to screens. When you do that, you're starting the social media addiction for your child. You know, it's much better spend time with your child. Talk to them. Ask them what they think about different things. You play a game with them instead of them having to play a game on a screen, okay? So, and then really learning to discuss with your kids, yeah? I mean, your daughter's a teenager now, so you can discuss. And, you know, what is it that's so captivating about social media? And, you know, do you think you're missing out on something? Or help your kid, you know, my theory is that every child should travel at some time, you know, in their late teens or early 20s. Everybody should go to a different country without a screen and relate to real live human beings and to see how people live in other countries, to talk to people and how do they think in other countries. How do people do things in other places? What do they believe? You know, it's so fascinating. Yeah, you learn so much from really being with other people who are different than you. Yeah? So I think that's a real important part of young people's education. Yeah? And then they learn, yeah, I can put down the screen. I can relate to real people. And it's interesting. And especially you're in another culture, the people teach you things about their culture and you start doing it with them. You know, they'll teach you a dance or they'll teach you a chant or something from their culture. And then you can do it with them and you form friendship. And it's wonderful. Okay? I also think that it's important for all of us, because adults are just as addicted to screens as young people are. Just turn it off. Okay? Yeah? But then you feel like, you know, it's part of your body now. Yeah? I can't take it off, because it's like chopping off. No, you can do that, yeah, and because if you don't do it at some point or another, you're going to get hit by a car. Huh? Because I walk around Singapore a lot without holding a headphone. Yeah, and I look at all the people, the real live people in front of me. They're all like this. They cross the street. The cars are zooming. I round a corner. I nearly collide with somebody because they're like this. What is so interesting in this? You know, that you get a thumbs up or you get a thumbs down, or that you hear your friend ate noodles for breakfast, or you hear that your other friend got a new pair of red socks. What is so interesting? I really don't understand. Yeah? So Facebook, all that kind of stuff, just, yeah. So then you're going to say, but you have a Facebook page. Okay, there's a Facebook page in my name. She set it up. And then she found one of our lay friends who operates the Facebook page. So neither she nor I don't have any idea how to do it. You know, our friend Tracy, she uploads all the different things, telling people to watch different teachings and so on. Yeah, I don't even know what's going on. Yeah? Do you look at the Facebook page? She has to know what's going on in my life. So I'm doing Facebook page.
I only agree on that.
Yeah. No, our friend does a very good job with it. Yeah, very, very good job. But I just, you know, I have no interest in doing that. Because I find the Facebook pages and stuff, it's so phony. Everybody's trying to create an image of, look at me, my life is wonderful. You know, and so you read other people's profiles and you look at their pictures and you go, oh, I wish my life were like that. My life is so messed up. But then on your Facebook page, you make it everything look wonderful. And other people look at your Facebook page and go, oh, that person's life is going so well. I wish my life were like that. My life is so crazy. You know, because when you create a profile, you're presenting one part of your life. Yeah? When you look at somebody else's profile, you're seeing one part of their life. When you look at your own life without creating a page, you know the reality of your own life. So you're not comparing apples to apples. You're comparing a false image of somebody else's life with who you really are. Yeah, useless. Yeah, totally useless. Don't waste your time doing that. Okay, really. And then there's so much misinformation on social media. Yeah, I don't know in Singapore if you suffer from it, but in the US, oh my goodness, you have the Russians who, you know, they influenced our 2016 election. And now they're trying to influence the 2020 election. And then you have the people on the far right and the people on the far left. And you have all the super PACs for, you know, our dear president. And, you know, and all these people put advertisements and stuff on social media. And it's all baloney. Yeah, it's total baloney. So, you know, if you want to know what's going on, you have to read something reliable, a reliable news channel, you know, and investigate for yourself, because all these ads are just, I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, they take your mind here and take your mind there and feed you with all sorts of wrong information. And then, of course, with the advertising, they make you feel inferior because you don't have the right laundry soap. Yeah, and you don't use the right toothpaste, and you'll never get married unless you use this toothpaste. Yeah. So So people are trying to sell you one thing after another. And especially the young people, you know, are usually, at least many of them, are very concerned about climate change. Yeah. I'm going to be over the hill when climate change really hits. But you young people are going to have to live in it. And if you believe all these advertisements and you buy more stuff, you're contributing to pollution, to climate change. Yeah. So young people, be aware of that. And you know, I think much better to try and stop climate change, especially here in Singapore. I mean, the ocean, if it rises a couple of feet, you guys gotta learn to swim. Yeah? Because you are at sea level and it's dangerous. Climate change is especially dangerous for places like Singapore. So young people and old people, we need to be very concerned with this. Yeah, so if you're gonna look at a screen, look at it and get right information for causes that are really important in your life and your world. You know? And who's dating who, and you know, yeah. Who got the Red Sox? You know, and that, none of that stuff's very important. So use your time and energy to use your brain. We have human intelligence. Use your human intelligence.
Hi, Venerable. Thanks for your talk. At the start of the talk, you mentioned a lot about acceptance of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have some antidote for us to really learn to fully accept who we are? And in a way that, you know, a lot of us, as you said, compare ourselves, have expectations from others. How do we get to fully accepting ourselves that it is okay?
Okay. So, one thing is, you know, with the expectations. Many of the expectations and many of our values are put into us from when we're really little. You know, the society tells us this is what success looks like, this is what's important. Our family and friends tell us you've got to be like this and don't be like that. When we're little kids, we can't discern very well. We just take it all in. And then we start believing whatever the adults tell us. Yeah. What's nice about growing up is when you grow up, you can learn to think about yourself, and then you can check if what society and the adults around you taught you is actually true or not. Because a lot of these things about, you know, in order to be successful, you've got to be XYZ. Or in order to be popular, you've got to be ABC. Or all these kinds of things, yeah, that we learn, that we just accepted as kids. Really start examining them. Use your adult human intelligence. And is this true? Yeah, is this true or is this not true? You know, like maybe you learned in your family that to keep a job, you've got to do whatever your employer says. You know, you can't stick up for yourself at all. You can't say you have any needs. And so that you maybe you saw it by example in your family, or that was, you know, what people told you, and you believed it. But now think about it. Is that right? Is that right? That you've got to do everything your boss tells you, even if it's unreasonable. Last time I was in Singapore, somebody told me that their boss told them to lie. They didn't say, you go out and lie. They said, tell the customer XYZ. But XYZ was clearly not true. Yeah, so does that mean that you do whatever your boss tells you, even if they're wanting you to lie to a customer or a client? You know, just because that's what you learn from watching the adults around you when you were little? No, you can stop and form your own values and opinions and your own ideas, your own standards, what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do, what you really believe in, and what you think is a lot of malarkey. Okay? Because there's a lot of things people believe in society that are rubbish. Yeah? So we have to learn to use our human intelligence and discern that. And your friends and your family may not agree with you. That's okay. Yeah? People can love each other even though they don't agree with everything. Okay. Oh, this will be the last question in the back.
Thank you, Venerable, for those many insights. I think I raised the average age in this room by being here. So, so my question actually has to do with perhaps you being able to share some experience with us, what to do when their own child goes, you know, have a problem with substance abuse, it comes to them like a sort of a, you know, a tornado or hurricane, because they sort of never expected it. So I was just wondering, from your experience, whether, you know, if there were no stringent laws or there were no parents having been able to sort of see the red flags earlier and so on, does it often happen that people who suffer burnout eventually get driven to substance abuse?
Okay, I missed a lot of that.
No, so does burnout lead to substance abuse? Because there are a lot of deterrent laws in this country, but we've seen in the past that people used to turn to smoking for stress relief out of peer pressure, but now due to seeing that it has no health benefits.
Yeah.
Smoking is on the decline, but she's seen in the US parents who have children in wholesome families turn to substance abuse.
Oh,
so is there
okay.
a correlation?
Okay, so you brought up the thing of good families and the kids have substance abuse problems. One of the biggest areas where there's substance abuse problems and also teenage suicide is in the wealthy, well-to-do families where the parents pressure the kids. You've got to get good grades. You've got to get into an excellent school. You've got to get to get this kind of job. And to get into a good school, you not only need good grades, but you need a CV with all sorts of extracurricular activities. And so you've got to take singing, and you've got to take tap dancing, and you've got to take golf, and you've got to, you know, do volunteer work here and do volunteer work there and all of it. And the parents pressure the kids so much. And that, I think, is one of the big causes of suicide for teens and young adults, as well as for substance abuse. Okay? Substance abuse in the States with the opioid crisis, it isn't only due to that, the opioid crisis. It's due to pharmaceutical companies lying to the public or lying to doctors and saying that oxycodone and these kinds of drugs are not very, they're not as addicting as things like morphine, so you could prescribe them to your patients, and then patients not wanting any pain at all, the mood in the country is changing, people don't want any pain at all, so they want lots of painkillers to remove any pain, and then the doctors prescribe these drugs that are actually quite addictive, and people start on them, and then they get addicted, and then you have a whole bunch of problems that come from that. How are they going to get the money to get the prescriptions to buy the drugs? Also, you know, then they start buying things off the street. They start shooting heroin because they can get on that on the street. They don't need a prescription. Heroin nowadays is cut with fentanyl, which is another drug that the pharmaceutical companies have pushed, and fentanyl is very powerful. I mean, just eat little bits of fentanyl can actually kill somebody. And so they mix up the heroin, they shoot it up, opioid death. And it's a real big public health problem in America now. So, and many of these people come from what you were saying, you know, good families, but because of the doctors misprescribing pain pills and people wanting pain pills, then you have this big problem. Okay. I can't remember the statistics, but a huge number of people in the U.S. Huge numbers of people in the U.S. have died because of opioid addiction. Yeah. There was one young man who, he wasn't so young, he was in his mid-30s. He had a substance abuse problem for many years. He quit, he came to the Abbey, he stayed with us for a few months. He was doing really well. And enjoying Dharma practice, and then he thought, oh, I want to go back to where my family is and see if I can practice there. He went back once he was there with his old friends and started using again, and he OD'd. Yeah, and his mother called us, you know, and said he was dead. And it was hard for us, you know, because, you know, it's somebody you know, somebody you care about. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we need a more positive note to end the class. Okay, now I never thought I would ever quote Nancy Reagan. But Nancy Reagan said, when people offer you drugs, you just say no. So that's some good advice, you know? People offer you substances, they offer you who knows what to get into, yeah? And it doesn't seem like a good idea to you. You just say no. And if people don't like you because you say no, then ask yourself, do I really want to be friends with people like that anyway? Because people who can't accept me saying no over something like that, are they really going to be reliable, true friends to start with? Okay. And so also learn to be a good friend to other people and encourage other people's generosity, their ethical conduct, their good qualities. Point out other people's good qualities. Encourage them to do what they're talented with. Yeah. And then rejoice when they're successful and rejoice when you're successful. Okay. Let's sit quietly for a moment. Take in what you've heard and then we'll dedicate.
Soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their sufferings. May the precious holy mind